Phil Mason Show. Phil Mason Show is on. Is on in five. In five. Four. Four. Three. Three. Two. Two. One. One.
Welcome to the Phil Mason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour, and we'll talk nothing but National Basketball Association. We have a great guest, as always. He'll be here for the entire hour on Tuesdays. His name is Amar. He's the editor of the number one Utah Jazz website, slcdunk.com. Please welcome Amar to the show. Amar, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, doing great. It's, you know, it's right around the corner. I can feel it. The sleepless nights waiting until the triple overtime game ends. It's awesome.
Exactly right. You know, exactly right. And the fans are jacked up. They're getting emotional already, and it hasn't even started yet. And I like that. I enjoy that. I don't mind what people say and do. I love talking basketball, real basketball, fantasy basketball, or whatever. Later on, we'll talk about the Utah Jazz. You'll give us those media day updates, and we'll answer some questions if we can. And then later on, we'll probably go into the SI.com's top 50 and see if there were any surprises for you. But up first, I got to tell you, the Knicks are my team. They've been my team most of my life, I suppose. But they never cease to amaze me. And Phil Jackson claims, now this is what he says, that the ESPN title, and I mean go figure, Phil Jackson believes New York Knicks playoff team, and that's not exactly what he says. He says, we believe that we're going to be a playoff team, and then we don't know how far we'll be able to go. We're hoping for the best. Are the Knicks a playoff team, man?
For this season, it's going to be an upward climb for them, but there's always a possibility. The East is pretty open, and you like the fact that the Knicks have this bravado. You need a guy like Phil Jackson to say these things, because saying the Knicks are maybe a playoff team isn't going to get you anything in New York City. You got to come out a little bit stronger than that, and I think that he phrased it in the correct way, because he didn't put a time limit. He didn't say that we're going to be a playoff team this year. And he didn't say that we're going to be a championship team. He played it, I think, the right way. But you have to realize that it's going to be really hard for it to happen this year. And that's not an indication of anything else except for the fact that there are just better teams in the East right now. You could name maybe, you know, 8, 9, 10 teams that could compete against New York and give them a hard time.
Well, I think you're right. You know, he's right. It was a good point that you made, too. He didn't say when they'd be a playoff team. He just said that he believes we're going to be. And how far we go, we don't know.
And to be honest, the NBA is a more fun league when New York is good. I grew up watching Upper New York State, a Rochester affiliate of NBC back in the 90s. And, you know, I saw the Knicks play all the time. And they were pretty much my Eastern Conference team for a while, if you're allowed to have one Western Conference and one Eastern Conference team. I know some people do that with the NFL and MLB as well. But in those cases, it's not East and West. But New York has to be good, because that's where all the flavor is. They tried to bring some of that to Brooklyn, but I don't think that it's really going to ever catch on. They don't have the mystique of playing in Madison Square Garden. You know, there's so many great historic moments that have happened there against the Knicks or as the Knicks played. I like the idea of Phil Jackson bringing that bravado back, but I don't see how they're going to get it done. Like, if you go down the list, a bunch of teams are actually better than the Knicks already and also got better this offseason. I don't see what New York has done to compete.
Well, they have, according to them, they've changed the chemistry of the locker room. They got rid of Tyson Chandler and Ray Felton. And they do claim that Amari Stoudemire is looking better. And they believe that Samuel Dellenberg can get it done. And Jose Calderon is definitely an upgrade over Raymond Felton. Pablo Prigioni is a very good backup, very dependable. The problem they have is a shooting guard, because that just never happened. Iman Shumpert, this better be his year. If it's not, who knows what they can do with him.
Right. J.R. Smith is going to have to be able to play a little bit more under control. which doesn't suit him, because what makes him great is the fact that he's so wild. You know, it's tough to rely on those types of guys. Like, if you just look at the Atlantic Division, like, how do you think that they fare? Are they better than Toronto? No. Are they better than Brooklyn? Probably not. So, even within their own division, it's they're looking at that middle seat if it was an airplane.
Yeah, they are. I have them third in the Atlantic, and I hate to put Brooklyn over them, but I don't have much of a choice when you look at what they have. Again, you know, it's this shooting guard situation. I look for Tim Hardaway Jr. to explode this season.
Yeah, he's probably the guy that they have pegged as a savior at this stage, because Shumpert, or Iman Shumpert, as he likes to be called, I'm sorry for pronouncing his name incorrectly, but he's kind of like a what you see is what you get player at this stage. Kind of like how Ronnie Brewer was with the Knicks back then. Like, okay, he's a defensive guy, he's long, and he can dunk. But you're not necessarily sold on some of the fundamental aspects of being a shooting guard. Tim Hardaway, on the other hand, he seems to know all about it. Like, he knows how to run through screens on offense and on defense. He can hit up the spot-up jumper. He doesn't have the crossover that his dad has, but he seems to be able to know when the play is better for him not to shoot. And a lot of shooting guards don't know that that's a play that exists.
Well, you're right about that. And the thing is he's probably the more consistent of the three, too. He's listed third on the depth chart, but that depth chart is probably deceiving. I don't know. I hope that he does. I look for him to have a breakout, really a breakout year, if he can do that. And, of course, we know Carmelo, he's going to go get his, because that's what he's there for, is to get his, and he will. And they might make the playoffs, but it'll be a tough climb, man. It's going to be totally uphill. Amari Stoudemire, what are you going to get from him? And Barnani's another one. What are you going to get from him?
If Andrea can step it up, like, be that number one pick, it's never going to happen. If he could at least start playing like a lottery pick, that would be helpful.
And then you have the big question mark, too, is Derek Fisher is the coach. How are these guys going to respond to him? Okay, now everything's all sugar and roses because he hasn't had to do anything yet. But when it comes down to what's happening on the court, last year, Amari Stoudemire claimed they completely tuned out Mike Woodson. So what are you going to do? And Mike Woodson has a pretty good coaching pedigree, if you ask me. I wasn't always the biggest fan of him as the Knicks coach. In fact, I was probably after him every day. But he at least has a pedigree, or had. And Derek Fisher, what does he have except be known for beating the Spurs, which... Well, it doesn't bother me that much, but what is it about him?
Yeah, it's kind of like the Knicks right now. Their front office, they're trying to keep up with the Joneses. And Brooklyn said, okay, we'll get a rookie point guard coach, and he'll be very popular. And they got Jason Kidd. So the Knicks come in and bring in a rookie head coach who's never coached before on any level in Derek Fisher. I know that Fisher was very well regarded as the president of the Players Association, but that entire thing kind of blew up under him as well. So I'm not necessarily certain that Fisher is the right guy for the job. He's a good communicator. He was a role player as, you know, when he was winning championships. But I think that's the thing. He's got that one thing that none of the Knicks currently have, and he's got a bunch of rings. He actually has more rings than the Knicks franchise does. So at the very least, they're going to tune him out much later than they would any other rookie coach. If they bring the triangle, does that really help things? It would be interesting to see if he could implement that. But as far as I know, Tex Winters isn't on the staff, and he was the only one who could actually actively teach it.
You know, that's a good point, too. A lot of people overlook it's Tex Winters' triangle. Well, it's a new updated version of the old one. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if Derek Fisher... when was the last time Derek Fisher played in the triangle? And look at what he has, his personnel-wise. When you look at those teams and the two most prominent teams were the Lakers and the Bulls, do you have basketball teams here in New York similar to them with talent and with abilities and with special set skills? I don't think so.
No, but I guess... I'm undervaluing the fact that this is a new page in Knicks history. They brought Phil Jackson back. They have a new head coach. They've removed an old head coach that was unpopular in the locker room in Mike Woodson. And they've kind of shuffled the deck a little bit. I think Calderon is a perfect complement to what Melo brings. He's able to get him the ball where he needs to score. And he's also a deadly threat when you kick the ball out. I don't ever remember seeing him miss an open jumper. So, you know, right there, that's great. The defense is going to take a hit without Tyson Chandler anchoring the paint, and especially with Calderon out there. He's not exactly going to be able to defend the John Walls of the league in the East. I don't think anyone can. So, you know, maybe that's not such a big fault. I would love to see them make the playoffs, but, like, are they better than Atlanta? Atlanta's going to have Horford back, and they were the number 8 seed last year. Now, are they better than Washington? Maybe if Washington has an injury.
That's possible. You know what, though, with Horford, he's another wild card, too, because he spends quite a bit of time out with injuries. They're not better than Atlanta with Horford gone. Who's going to stop Paul Millsap on this basketball team?
It's not Melo.
Well, it won't be Melo. He's not there for that. You don't get your name in the newspaper by playing defense. And Melo's not there. No one expects him to really do it. Although, when he wants to, he's awfully good. And he's awfully, or I should say he has a great ability to chase down balls. I saw him diving in the stands earlier in the season last year. But then that all stopped, too, after a while. And then again, you've got Amari. Who knows what he's going to bring? Andre Barnani, he's not exactly the best defender. Shumpert is supposed to be the defender, but, well, who knows what he's going to do? I think he wants to score now. And it's just a big mess, and it doesn't need to be that way. I think Jackson is in the process of rebuilding this team. I look for J.R. Smith to be gone. And I look for Shumpert to be gone too, or Shumpert, as he likes to refer to himself as. What are you going to do? I think that's what you almost have to do, right?
Well, I think the good news is that this is a new page. So as a result, the expectations shouldn't be as high as they normally would be. It's not like they're bringing Pat Riley in, or it's not like they have a team that's a playoff contender already. And they're replacing their coach with Don Nelson, who was a very popular coach. He's won Coach of the Year 3 times before. Knicks fans know that Don Nelson didn't work out in New York. He didn't even last half the season, as far as I remember. So there are no expectations. You still have a very talented team on paper. You've got one of the best scorers in the league that you can obviously build around. And you're playing in probably the most important place in the world for basketball. That's New York. Knicks fans are diehard fans. You love them. They love the Knicks. They hate the Knicks. I think that this season is just going to be an opportunity for them to better identify which players they're going to have to keep on the team for the next season and the next season after that.
Well, I agree with you there, too. I think Barnani and Stoudemire, when they lose those two contracts, that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen the Knicks do, and I've seen them do dumb things over the last 40 years. But trading a first-round pick for Andrea Barnani. Now, if Barnani can shoot and do his thing and he stays on the floor, fantastic. But the problem is he doesn't. And Stoudemire again, you know, which one? You're never going to see the one that played for Phoenix or even the one who played three quarters through the first season as a Knick. But if he can contribute, the big question, too, the other one for me, Amar, is that middle spot on the floor, center position. How long can Dellenberg go? I mean, he's ready for a Social Security check, I think. And Jason Smith, okay. Cole Aldridge? Cole Aldridge barely saw the floor last year. I kind of thought that was surprising that he didn't play more. What are they going to do? This is not a very good rebounding team. This could be ugly really
well,
quick.
Yeah, like it kind of goes to Sam in the middle. He has a tendency to be a little bit selfish on the court, which is never something that you want. But for all of his faults, he is a pretty good rebounder. He is a shot changer, not necessarily a shot blocker. But the whole issue about defense is that it's predicated upon effort, and you're not going to give effort unless you believe in your teammates and believe in your team. And I guess maybe that goes back to the locker room and the chemistry. I'm not there, but I do know one guy who has always been known as a great communicator is Phil Jackson. He is there. Another guy who's known to always get the respect of his teammates and be an ambassador and be able to demonstrate why something is important is Derek Fisher. He had to do that with the entire Players Association. They may not necessarily be great basketball players in their days. Phil Jackson definitely wasn't. Fisher was marginal. But they may have it where the Knicks need it the most, and that's the brains.
Yeah, it could be interesting, and it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a lot of fun covering that bunch this year. There's no doubt about it. Amar, great stuff, man. We're off to a flying start. What we're going to do is take a break, and when we return, we're going to talk Utah Jazz basketball and a scandal in Utah? Unbelievable. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Phil Mason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Mason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
Know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station. This is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Mason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Mason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Mason Show. One of those teams that we love to watch. We love to watch young teams. We love to watch young up-and-coming teams. And one of those teams is the Utah Jazz. And Amar is here from SLC Dunk, the number one Utah Jazz website. Training camp has begun, Amar. What big news. Trey Burke is in the news. They're not even talking about basketball. They're talking about Trey Burke and a scandal involving some nude photos. What's up with that?
Yeah, this is obviously not the best way to start off the season, but if it's going to happen, you'd probably want it to happen in September, so that by the time the media cycles through and through all the different narratives, it's not even something people care about when the games are actually starting. And for those who don't know, it became publicized over the internet on social media that there were some nude photographs, selfies that Trey Burke had taken that were being circulated. Now, we have some pretty good investigators at SLC Dunk, and they were able to identify that these photos were actually taken, if not also uploaded, months ago. But it only took, you know, it went completely under the radar, and it took a while for it to get any type of traction. And it seemed to make a head because it exploded on Twitter last night. And I'm sorry, two nights ago. And I feel bad about it because it's not like he was posting himself. He had given these photographs to somebody else and he had trusted those people with those photographs. And he's a consenting adult. He can do whatever he wants with whatever photographs. And that person put it on the internet, or someone who knows that person put it on the internet. And we're still trying to find out some of the facts, but it's an unfortunate situation that makes the team look bad and is no doubt a regrettable thing for a 21-year-old to go through.
Oh, you said a mouthful there with 21 years old. He's a young guy. You know what, though? He probably learned a very valuable lesson out of this. Don't send any pictures like that to anybody. You know, keep your friends close, but don't send them any nude shots because they're going to wind up on Twitter. That's just unfortunate. It really is a sad thing, but you know, it is what it is. It's a mistake he made. He's a young guy. It looks like everyone's going to get past it. Dennis Lindsay had the following to say. He's the general manager of the Jazz. It's safe to say that we are disappointed in what we've learned so far, but we are going to move forward. At this point in time, we're collecting facts, and we're going to reserve final judgment for a later date. In other words, as long as there aren't any more out there, more than likely this is the last you're going to hear the Utah Jazz say anything about this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Utah is a very authoritarian team. They want to get these high-character individuals. They go on the radio almost every week talking about how they have a very specific set of guidelines and rules. Even a few years ago, Jerry Sloan had instituted a curfew for road trips that you needed to be in your hotel room at a certain time. They have a very conservative base. And I'm not just talking about the fan base or the fact that they're in Utah. The thing that really matters is who gives money to the Utah Jazz, who sponsors them, or who gets their ads put out there. And those are people from a very conservative base from a generation or two ago. So trying to explain a scandal to them like this is completely out of the question, because they're not going to understand it. They're not going to understand how easy it is for a young person to be taken advantage of like this. And the Utah Jazz would not want to make this any bigger than it is. So that's exactly right, as you put it. I hope that it does go away because it is a distraction, but some people have called into light the fact that Trey Burke has kind of gotten in trouble on social media before. Last year, he made disparaging remarks about the appearance of a man who had a congenital birth defects, and he and Shaq and some other people got into it. He later apologized because, as you said, you know, like if he is a 21-year-old now who's involved in the scandal with pictures, last year he was a 20-year-old getting involved with making fun of somebody who looked funny on Instagram. So as it stands now, his social media presence is going to be highly monitored. He is no longer on Twitter. His account has been deactivated. As far as I know, his Instagram is still running strong. But both his agent and the Utah Jazz PR department, they're definitely going to have a lot to say about this to Trey. And the Utah Jazz had to do this with Enes Kanter 2 years ago. So it's something that I think is only going to be germane to the problem of having these young guys on your team. Young people sometimes make bad decisions. It's not always their fault, but sometimes they get caught up in it.
Oh, yeah. In Utah, that's the wrong place to do stuff like that. they're very conservative, as you said, and there's a lot of money behind it, conservative dollars. Forget, like you said, I agree with you, the religious aspect of it. It just, it is what it is there, and you have to be above and beyond reproach in order to be accepted. And that's the one thing I was wondering about, is how are the fans going to treat him? Because, you know, they don't go for that sort of thing, man. That's like you said, and I agree with you, it's a very conservative fan base. Right. How are they going to treat him, you think?
I guess to generalize, it goes back down to which generation of fan are you. The people who are younger than me couldn't care less, because they're probably involved in the same thing as well, where they're sending selfies or nude pictures to their people that they're dating or whatever. And that's to generalize all of the younger people. I'm sorry. And to generalize all of the people who are older than both of us, they're obviously going to be disgusted by this, because this is just not the type of behavior that you would even want to get involved in, even during courtship. If he's interested in marrying this girl or these girls, whoever it is, I guess he can't marry all of them, but unless
maybe in Utah you can.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the joke that I was trying to avoid, but
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. It's
send
it's
the right. Hate mail to Phil at philnasonshow.com.
It's hilarious. Yeah, but like, it's the fans will get over this faster, except for the ones who are really want to make this an issue and be upset about it. But at the same time, we have to look at Utah Jazz history. Karl Malone had 3 kids with teenagers before he even got married. But that was something that we were able to not deal with, because it was so very under the rug in the middle of nowhere, Louisiana, back before Western games were even played on TV live. They had to do the tape delay thing back then in that era. Now we have basically Twitter, where unfortunately sports athletes can make their own news by messing up in real time.
Yep, and that's just what happened here too. Messed up in real time. Instagram, Trey Burke, dump all those social media things. Don't send pictures to anybody unless it's your agent. And I'm sure your agent already saw enough of you throughout your life. Good Lord, that's a tough one there. I feel sorry for him in a way, because you know what? You can't trust anybody anymore, can you?
Right, exactly. And obviously we don't have the full story. We don't even know if the person he sent it to was the one who uploaded it. It could be a jealous girlfriend of that girl. You never know. And the more you do find out, the more you're just going to reveal the way that these young athletes live their lives. So, you know, tread lightly.
Yeah, tread very lightly. I agree there. Gordon Hayward, number 57 on Sports Illustrated's list. Jeez, is he fit number 57 in the NBA? He's up to number 67 last year.
Exactly. Like, it's a positive curve for him. He's going up every year by whatever metric. If you look at, I'm sure the ESPN rankings are going to have him higher than he was before. If you look at the video game rankings, he's way higher than he was before. Sports Illustrated as well, Slam Magazine, I'm sure they're going to, you know, rank him higher. I think he's going to eventually have public perception reach his actual playing ability. At this stage, for a guy who's 25, who's only played on losing teams before, and who's never really had the spotlight on him until last year, being named almost a top 50 player is pretty good. Because if you look at it, there's 30 teams, so that means that he's almost a first pick. If you're top 60 and there's 30 teams, that you're among the top 1 or 2 players on every team, if you generalize it that way. I think Gordon Hayward, who probably understands math and probability, will think that, hey, that's not that bad.
But will the fan base? Because they seem to like him a lot, and I agree with them. And when you talk about his rankings in fantasy basketball, he's way above 57. Number 57 is not a bad thing in the top 100 for real basketball players. I have to make sure I make these distinctions, Amar, because we have folks that they don't understand the difference maybe sometimes.
But, well, I think that the Jazz fans, if they're going to be upset about anything, it would be the fact that he's ranked below Chandler Parsons, who is at 56 on Sports Illustrated's list. And if Gordon Hayward was number 11 and if Chandler Parsons was number 10, they'd be upset still. It's not a single issue here, the single issue being Gordon Hayward's perceived rank. It's the fact that it's his, assumed rank compared to his peers. Chandler Parsons is another young guy. He was with the USA camp. He plays almost the same position. He gets almost the same stats across the board. So you would think that if you just look on paper, there shouldn't be much of a reason to think that, oh, well, it's an insult to be lower than Chandler Parsons. But I, as a Jazz fan myself, the insult is in the perception that he is lesser than him, even though he is responsible to do more on the court. This is kind of like when A.C. Green would be voted in as an all-star because he played on the Lakers in a complimentary role versus Karl Malone, who didn't. And he was like the number one player on his team. So sometimes you just can't beat perception. And if you're a bad team in a small market, you really have an uphill fight. And I think that Gordon Hayward is all right with that, because at the very least, it's another chip to put on his shoulder, the one that he's accumulating since he missed that half-court shot against Duke.
You're right. And there's others involved here, too. Luol Deng at number 55, Klay Thompson, 54, Josh Smith at 53, Roy Hibbert at 52, and Joe Johnson at 51. You could almost make a case that Hayward is number 51, right? I could. Easy. I think he's more valuable to his basketball team than any of these guys, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. But again, it's the whole perception thing, and perception is based upon what you've actually achieved in the league. Roy Hibbert has been on a number of lists. He's well known as a defensive player, and his team has gone to the Eastern Conference Finals. Klay Thompson just came out and won a gold medal with Team USA. You know, Luol Deng has been an all-star for, you know, a couple of years, and he's always well-liked around the league, and he was highly used by one of the best coaches, Tom Thibodeau. So, Gordon Hayward, what's his claim to fame? He was drafted on a team, and then in his rookie year, his head coach retired, and then he never sniffed the playoffs except for a sweep 1 year. Part of how good you are depends on how far you go, and that's just the truth of it.
Yeah, but it's kind of a kick in the pants, though, because, you know, it's not Hayward's fault he's on a crappy team, or was on a young team, I should say. Not a crappy team, but a young team that didn't do as well as they probably would have liked to. But I still would take Hayward over all those guys I just mentioned, because Hayward has got a ceiling on him that's just not going to quit, I think. And I really like watching him play. He's going to be like in my first three picks in fantasy too, by the way. I'm going to give you a scoop. If you're playing with me in a 12-team league, he will be within the 36th pick.
I think it's possible that Gordon Hayward could be like a Chris Mullin, but with better rebounding and less proficient shooting and scoring. If that happens, that's awesome, because I believe Chris Mullin is a Hall of Famer, so that's not a bad comparison to have. But like all of these off-season lists, everyone wants to make a list, and because lists generate discussion, and these lists are subjective. I don't know if there's any mathematical formula that goes into saying that Chandler Parsons is one unit better than Gordon Hayward, or 0.0001 unit better than Gordon Hayward. They're both really good players. And as long as people are going to be, you know, more visible, the more visible guy is going to be regarded higher. And that's just the fact that Jazz fans have been dealing with for, you know, just 30 years now.
Yeah, I guess you're right, you know, because Karl Malone gets maligned all the time. Well, he never won a championship. Well, so what? I don't think Oscar Robertson did either. But Karl doesn't make Karl Malone not the second best power forward of all time. Okay, he's number one in your book, number two.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, I made sure to make that clarification. You know, I don't want to make that mistake again. But yeah, I see what you mean. You know, small market too. Well, Hayward probably doesn't even care. You know, I think a lot of these players don't even care, and I think you're right. It's the list thing, and it's for us. That's what we need. We like the list because it gives us 15 minutes of great radio, and that's just what, well, this gave us like 8 or 9 minutes at a tough time of the year to talk basketball. So it's a lot of fun to do. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're All Forget, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station. This is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Omar from SLCDunk.com is here with me. We're going to take a look at the top 50 players on Sports Illustrated's top 100 for 2014-2015. And what I'm going to do, Omar, is I'm just going to run down the first five or six names. You've got Drew Holiday at number 50, Paul Gasol at 49, Nikola Pekovic at number 48, David West number 47, Paul Pierce, number 46. Are those guys in the right spots?
You could always argue that some of these guys are up there because of past perception. I think that you could easily say that these guys are all top 50 players. Like, every single team in the league would want one of these guys on their team. So I don't have many arguments about it at this stage.
No, I don't either, really. I like Pekovic, though. I mean, he might be a little higher up the chart, but as we get going, we're going to have some fun. Here you go, right here, number 45, Deron Williams.
Yeah, I take offense to this. Like,
I lost in number 44. Nikolai Batum at number 43. Zach Randolph, 42. Manu Ginobili, number 41. Well done. Boy, I'll tell you what, man. Is there politicking involved in this?
There probably is. And I think it's kind of like the idea is that, and this is something which I've found out by talking to people who run the draft sites as well, is that everyone kind of looks over each other's shoulder or look across the aisle to whoever's on the next desk writing the test to see how other people perceive people. It's important to not go out and be an outlier, say like, oh, well, you know, I still think this guy's a top five player, or, oh, well, I don't think this guy's on my draft board. You don't want to expose yourself to radical thinking. So I do think the politicking does happen, but it's not necessarily within an organization. It's like, oh, well, ESPN says this and Slam Magazine says this. Maybe I need to reevaluate my list so that it's more in line with theirs. And I think these are necessarily safe choices, particularly with the case with Darren Williams. Everyone seems to agree that he's going down every year these last 5 years. But is he really this bad? Even if you look at the internal consistency of Sports Illustrated's list, he is the 15th best point guard in the league. I do not know if that's necessarily true. I think that that is actually 100% false, and he's going to prove people wrong this year.
Yeah, maybe so. I have 45. Maybe he's even worse. He dropped 21 spots from last year, but then, you know, they go by his statistics, and that's not good. His win shares are at 5.4. Boy, 17.7 per. That's pretty low for him. And, jeez. But Ty Lawson, look at this. Ty Lawson, number 44. Is
Ty Lawson
a better point guard than Darren Williams?
No, Ty Lawson's a one-trick pony who can't play defense. You know, like, I still think that, and this is the funny thing, that there doesn't seem to be internal consistency. Some of these guys appear to be ranked based upon their historical relevance. Other people are ranked supremely just based on their last season. And in the case of some of the people in the top 10, it appears to be that their ranking is based upon future projections or what we think they're going to do. In the case of Darren Williams, his ranking doesn't follow the same reasoning for Ty Lawson's number 44 ranking. Like, so I don't think that he's a better player. I think that Darren, even at his worst, is better than Ty Lawson. He can post him up. He can defend the pick and roll. He has a more legitimate three-point shot, I think, in the fourth quarter. We've seen him take teams farther. I don't get this.
Ty Lawson, number 44. One-trick pony, yeah. But no way. Nicholas Batum at number 43?
I would think that he should be higher. But then again, I haven't exactly made a top 50 list, so maybe this is where he needs to be. But I regard him very highly.
As do I. That's crazy. Now, Zach Randolph at number 42, we talked about that last week. He's probably right about where he should be. Manu Ginobili, the 41st best basketball player in the NBA. He jumped 15 spots from the year before. I guess winning matters.
Yeah, if you win a title, it looks really good. I can only imagine, would he have remained the same if the Spurs lost last year? I don't know.
He would have dropped.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, well, he's another year older and, you know, he's past his prime. But going back to some of these other guys, is Zach Randolph is in his prime. You know, he's close to a 2010 guy. You know, it's kind of funny that some of the big men who are ahead of him are not close to that.
Nope, not even close. Manu Ginobili, number 41 in the NBA. He won't even get drafted probably in fantasy basketball. He only played 1,500 minutes last year too, by the way. And that was seventh most on the team. 22 minutes a game, and he's the 41st best player in the NBA. Now, here we go. Let's go from 40 on. Rajon Rondo, Tyson Chandler at 39, DeAndre Jordan at 38, Andre Drummond at 37, and Brooke Lopez at 36. Goodness, where do you begin with that?
Yeah, I would hope that there's more separation between these limited big men and Brooke Lopez, who's a two-way player. Like, I get it. Like, some of those guys get a ton of rebounds because they're the only one doing that job on the team and also block shots. But you can't put DeAndre Jordan in the game in the fourth quarter. He's going to get fouled and miss his free throws. That's the same thing with Tyson Chandler. You know, I don't think that these guys are necessarily better than Zach Randolph.
No, I don't either. I certainly don't either. And you know what? Andre Drummond at number 37, that's a big jump from number 63 last season. He had a really good year last year. I look for bigger things from him this season with Stan Van Gundy. He might be a little too low, too. He might be a much better center than the others, I would think.
Yeah, Stan may make him the next Dwight. We never know.
Let's hope not. Let's hope he makes him better than the weird, because we can't handle him. But Brook Lopez, number 36, at least he's above these other guys. Because it would be really a bummer if he was below it, because he is a two-way player. And he was playing pretty darn good until he got hurt. And that's just sad. Okay, here we go. Let's go to number 35 and on to number 30. Goran Dragic, number 35. Paul Millsap, number 34. Eric Bledsoe, number 33, Mike Connolly, number 32, and John Wall, number 31. What do you think about that?
This is the same type of thing where they bunch together a number of similar players. Like, you got Dragic, Bledsoe, Connolly, and John Wall. Okay, well, we have to fit in the point guard somewhere. Now, is this necessarily the right order? I actually don't know about that. I like Conley. I think Wall is definitely the best of this group, but I do think that there should have been a little bit more separation between Wall and these other guys. It's kind of like the same thing with Brook Lopez. I think that he's way better than Andre Drummond at this point in time. Unless, and this is the big thing, unless you're overvaluing just the stats and you're not looking at who's an actual better player, you're just looking at, well, who gets the stats? And stats is purely just a product of who's playing. And these guys who get big stats on bad teams obviously look a lot better than the guys who are on playoff teams who are, you know, have to share the ball or share the glory a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. But this isn't even a good fantasy top 100 or top 50. Paul Millsap at 34. Goodness. Okay, let's continue because we don't want to get in too much trouble here. Although, I guess getting in trouble is something I do well.
I love getting in trouble. Let's do it.
Kyle Lowry, number 30. Andre Iguodala, number 29. Kawhi Leonard, number 28. DeMarcus Cousins, number 27.
Yeah, like these are rankings based upon a dartboard at this stage. Like, you know, get the blindfolds, get the darts, and make your list. I like Kawhi, but right now it also points to the fact that there does not seem to be any internal consistency with how these rankings are made. If you got DeMarcus Cousins so high just because of his stats, Kawhi's stats don't mean that he's better than a guy like Kyrie Irving. You know what I mean? But they're ranking it based on something else for him that they're not ranking the other people on. You know, he's a winner. He's a championship. Big game player, and he plays defense. So I guess we have to give him some extra points somewhere that don't integrate with the other reasonings we have for these other players.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense. With Iguodala, he has a 13.7 per, and this is the way they look like they were doing it, because Kawhi Leonard is a 19.4 per. DeMarcus Cousins is a 26.2. Oh, my goodness. Al Jefferson, number 26.
Like, you love that because Big Al had a really good year where he played with some level of prominence. And I think that's the other thing, that he had better statistics when he was in Minnesota, right? He was like a 22-11 guy. But now that he actually makes the playoffs and he's on a team that's pretty visible because Michael Jordan's the boss there and they're playing in the right time zone for people to talk more about him and watch his games, he obviously looks a lot better than he ever did, even though technically he was a better player before when he was younger and didn't have the injuries that he currently plays with. So it's a crapshoot. And like, you love Big Al, but this is another case where it's all about perception. It's not exactly about the actual production, which is funny because the only way that DeMarcus is up there is because of his production, being the best big man on a really bad team that will fire their coaches in order to keep him happy.
Yep, you're right. And then Horford at number 25, Kobe Bryant at number 24.
This is a Lifetime Achievement Award.
And this is another one. Derrick Rose at number 23. Damian Lillard, number 22. Yes. Kyrie Irving, 21.
Yeah, see, that's the mistake I made. I said Kyrie Irving, not Kyle Lowry. But in the case of Rose, this is, again, like, oh, well, we have him up here because we think he's going to be this good. Whereas the next guy is up there because, oh, well, this is what he actually produced. So it's a sliding scale. I hope that Rose has a good year. It would be very good for him because his professional life has been pretty bad the last few years, despite making millions of dollars for not playing. But, you know, the closer we get to the top 20, the more I think you can pick apart the actual ranking. Back when it was in the 50s, you really couldn't care.
Yeah, that does make sense. Now, we've got number – we're just going to read these because I want to get down to the top five because this is interesting too. Dwayne Wade at number 20, Serge Ibaka at number 19, and we'll be talking about this, folks, all week. Chris Bosh at number 18, Joakim Noah, number 17, Mark Gasol, number 16, Tony Parker, number 15, Dirk Nowitzki, 14, James Harden, 13, LaMarcus Aldridge, number 12, Carmelo Anthony, number 11. We already talked about Carmelo a bit today. And then the top 10, Blake Griffin at number 10. Dwight Howard, number 9. Stephen Curry, number 8. Kevin Love, number 7. Anthony Davis, number 6. Tim Duncan, number 5. Russell Westbrook, number 4. Chris Paul, number 3. Kevin Durant, 2. And LeBron James, number 1. Tim Duncan is number 5, and he's ahead of Anthony Davis, and he's ahead of Kevin Love, and he's ahead of Dwight Howard, and he's ahead of Blake Griffin.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable for a guy who scored like 12 points a game last year.
Yeah, actually, yeah, and we have to be careful because we get in trouble when we, because we're disrespecting him. You see, he actually scored 15.1. points per game last year, 9.7 rebounds, 3 assists, and a 49% field goal percentage. Still,
my apologies.
Lifetime Achievement Award.
It's kind of funny because you have Tim Duncan at number 5, and I think right after that you have Anthony Davis, and it's like they get this ranking based upon the two different ends of the spectrum. That okay, Anthony Davis, we hope he's going to be this good, so we're going to put him up there. And with Tim Duncan was an absolute beast back in the late 90s and early 2000s. But that was 14 years ago. He's 38 now. He's getting this ranking not because of what we think he's going to actually be, but based upon the respect that we think he's somehow owed. Like, he's got a number of MVPs and so forth. But you just can't give this type of ranking top five in the NBA in 2014 based upon some sort of honorific, because if that was the case, then if we were doing these lists back in the 90s, Kareem would still be there for playing one game a season or whatever.
Yep, definitely. This listing didn't make much sense. It is what it is. Amar, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
I'm angry. Spurs fans, get at me.
There you go. That was Amar. You can find him and write to him at slcdunk.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank Amar for being here for the entire hour talking nothing but NBA basketball. Until next time, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. And most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.